Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our series of That One Play. And the one today is the greatest in my mind in Ravens history prior to the Mile High Miracle. It is the 2000 AFC Divisional Game, the block and return play. Keith Washington blocking at Anthony Mitchell on the return. Here to talk about that with me and his experience that day, for that matter, is Gil from Perry Hall. Gil, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. How are you doing today?
Wonderful. Really glad to have you, Gil. Now, you know, talk a little bit about why this is one of your favorite football memories and why the play you chose for this series.
Well, it's a great football memory for me and my wife because quite by happenstance, we won a radio contest on Mix 106.5, JoJo and Kenny in the Morning. My wife happened to hear very randomly that they were having this and told me, and I called unbeknownst to her and got myself eligible to compete in the contest. They said, hey, one of the aspects is that you've got to be at this particular location at 7 o'clock in the morning on the Friday before the game. And can you get there at 7 o'clock? I said, well, where is it? And when they told me where it was a mile from my house. As the crow flies. Yeah, I could be there.
Yeah.
So the contest was an electric football game. And I didn't know that at the time. And from my childhood, I was an electric football demon. And I said to my wife, I said, hey, you know, I know the electric football. I know how to play this. And so what they did is they had a series of 20 contestants and did 2 10-person heats and had the fastest player to the end zone to win heats. And then they had us compete, the two winners of the two heats to, you know, win the contest. Well, I do have to just take a moment to say that I knew that if you manipulate the tines underneath the football players, you know, you can get them to move in certain directions. But if you sweep them back, that is the thing to do for speed. So I won the heat. And as I was going up against the other person, they competed the two of us by placing the two people on the field and having them compete against each other and going towards opposite end zones. Well, the first time they did it, both of the players ran into the wall and they scrubbed the contest. Then they had it do it again. And here's how improbable it was. And they were doing this live on the radio. Okay.
That sounds like a wonderful story. That really does. The thing I've got that is a little bit similar to that. And, you know, I don't want to one up the guest here, but one of the proud moments of my childhood was finding an electric football game in somebody else's trash. And I'm like, yep. It was in an alley where we've always played ball. And I'm like, what's that? And, you know, it's an electric football set in the trash. I mean, who would throw away a treasure like this? You know, it's right. Just like, you know,
right,
so
right, right.
Anyway, we grabbed that. Yeah.
So I'll make the long story short, but after they scrubbed the first one, they put the players on the field again. And the person I was competing against, their player went towards their end zone, and my player went up against the wall. And it looked like I was going to lose the contest. Then all of a sudden, their player circled around the field, touched my player, and pushed my player towards their end zone. Then peeled off, went towards their end zone, circled around, came back, hit my player again, pushed it towards the end zone, their end zone, peeled off, circled around, came back and hit my player again, and then turned my player into to go into the end zone. I won the contest.
There you go.
We won round trip tickets. Two nights, three days, a limo to and from the game, and $50 spending cash. And we were off to Tennessee to go to our first away Ravens game.
Very sweet. Awesome. So let's bring it back to the actual football here. That's a great story though, Gil. Well worth the time here. So we obviously, you know, being there, there's a lot of the fun in terms of this game. I've always appreciated being there in terms of the atmosphere of being at a win on the road. So that was certainly great. The Ravens offense didn't have anything going that day. Take us through a little bit of the game if you want to, right up to the point where it's 10-10 and Del Greco is setting up.
Well, the overwhelming thoughts for me were just the start of the game, where they fired up the crowd with on the big screen showing Billick, because if you remember, we beat them the first ever time in their stadium during the regular season, and it was his famous, you know, they say they're the best team, but not on this day, not today. Yeah, so they played that. Crowd was fired up.
Sorry. They had a stolen playbook from Trent Dilfer, very famously. So the game itself, I'll basically lay this out here. So the opening touchdown to Eddie George.
Yes.
And that was on the very opening drive. So it certainly looked like this taunting the Ravens method that they'd used prior to the game was kind of playing out. And then the Ravens didn't do anything until they had the big play from Shannon Sharp, a 56-yard pass, I think it was, down the left sideline. Went all the way to the 1 yard line, set up the Ravens only TD, and frankly was the Ravens only big play of the entire day. That was pretty much their offense. In the second half, they got the game tied up at 10 after a 14-yard run by Jamal Lewis, which literally might have been their second longest play of the day. They only had five or six first downs the entire game. Let me tell you, because this is one of these things, there's going to be people listening to this who don't have any memory of this game. And it's so sad. 23-6 in first downs, the Ravens lost it. They went 2 of 11 on third down that day, and they had a grand total of 134 offensive yards to 317 by the Titans in the game. So the Titans completely dominated the game offensively, but the Ravens were still in it. The Titans primarily had blocked two punts from the Ravens, both by the same guy, and the Ravens had blocked two field goals, both by the same guy. Same first time that's ever happened in Ravens history. Keith Washington blocked both of those field goals.
Well, I'll tell you, when Al Del Greco lined up, the score was tied. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at it, and we're amongst a sea of Titans fans thinking that it's a very bleak moment because the game wasn't a lot of scoring, like you said, not a lot of offense by the Ravens. And he blocks the kick. In this sea of Titans fans, my wife and I, we jump up and we go, yes! Okay? And then we look down on the field and we see Anthony Mitchell grab the ball out of the air. Honestly, Ken, for as much as we loved the team, we had no idea who had just grabbed the ball. Yep. We just saw that it was a Raven. And we started jumping up and going, run, run, you know, and he ran down the sideline and he got into the end zone. And we turned towards each other and we put our arms up and we're like, yes. And at that moment, we realized nobody around us was cheering.
Life goes on.
Yeah. And it was at that moment that we realized we weren't in our own stadium and that nobody around us were Ravens fans. And they were looking at us. And I can tell you honestly that the Titans fans that were there, I really felt, looked at us and were just like, you guys got so lost in that moment, you know, and that they weren't upset, you know, you know, because we weren't being obnoxious. We were just enjoying the moment.
Enjoying the moment for yourself. And that's, you know, good people can always accept that in road fans and do that. And I will just say the Titans fans of the entire NFL, we've been to every opposing team at this point. They are by far the nicest fans in the entire NFL. I'd recommend that for anybody's first trip. It's a nice, easy Southwest city to get there. So it's a great choice in terms of just a nice, easy flight to Nashville, easy to get tickets, generally speaking. The Titans fans are great. So they've never given us any trouble. I would not suggest going to Cleveland or Oakland. Pittsburgh is better. Cleveland or Oakland are the worst.
Understood. We experienced the same thing. After that play, though, I can tell you that there was just quiet in the stadium because they were stunned that we had taken the lead. And so I can't remember if it was the next series or the another subsequent series, but when they threw the little flare to Eddie George and, you know, quite frankly, he bobbled it just a little bit, but, you know, Ray Lewis was on him like a pea in a pod and grabbed the ball from him and then scurried up the sideline. That happened right in front of our location, and he went into the end zone, and the air just totally came out of the stadium.
I think we had the same relativity to the field as you did, because all of the big plays were basically on that, what I would call the left sideline with the Ravens traveling with that wear. So I guess Shannon Sharpe's play was in the second quarter. Ray Lewis's play was in the fourth quarter. And then the touchdown by Eddie George to start the game was on that side as well. Just and Anthony Mitchell ran by us going the other way is my recollection. Okay. How can that be? Yeah. That can't really be.
As I remember it, Anthony Mitchell was on, well, for me, as my perspective, Anthony Mitchell was on the far sideline. And was he going away from us? No, he was coming towards us. Yes. Okay. So we were he was coming to the end zone towards our left. Yeah.
Okay. That does make sense because it has to be the same direction as Ray Lewis because they're both in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
I wanted to point out one thing because I've since had the good fortune at an autograph convention.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
To talk to both Keith Washington and Anthony Mitchell about that play in particular. And the first thing, by the way, if you're setting up an autograph convention, have those two next to each other. It's the most obvious ball signing op. If you can get Al Del Greco at the same table, boy, you'd really have something. That would be a nice item. But you know, Keith Washington and Anthony Mitchell is a great pair of signatures to have on a 2000 Ravens item of some sort. So anyway, Washington blocks the kick. It goes right up in the air. It was the second block kick of the game for him. The first trailed back into the end zone after being blocked and came to a stop and was, I think, placed at the 20 or not returned to the spot of the kick, which may or may not have been correct, but not getting into that for a second. What I was told by Mitchell is that he, if you can see him on the video running back to try and pick up the first ball, Rod Woodson says, no, don't touch that. After that, after that's been blocked, it's like a punt. Don't block it. You might fumble it, and you know, you then you're on the hook for it. So he really knew. But the second time, you can see everybody on the field is giving him the safe sign. Don't go after that football when it's up in the air. Anthony Mitchell doesn't pay him any attention, catches it, you know, right out of the air, and then immediately all of those players, Woodson and Herring, Harris in particular, went and turned and made productive blocks heading back up the field to help lead that convoy. Frank Wycheck probably could have made the tackle were it not for a good block on that on the return. And our view of that was very similar to you, because we didn't know who Anthony Mitchell was, and we saw either at field level or on the big screen, I can't remember which it was, that A. Mitchell was on the back of his uniform. And my wife turns to me and goes, A. Mitchell, as an implied question mark. and I wasn't the fan that I am today. And so I didn't know who Anthony Mitchell was either. I know he'd been on the team. Well, I know now that he'd been on the teams, special teams, but he didn't play in any of the very DB heavy packages for the Ravens that year. So it was a very cool moment there. And Maureen still says that sometimes. If I watch the play, she'll turn to me and she'll go, hey, Mitchell.
Gotcha. Yeah. We had no idea. In fact, after the play, we were like, who was that? And it took us a while to find out, I believe maybe by seeing a replay or something. And it was like, oh, okay, he's on our team, but yay. then like the Ray Lewis play happened, and then, you know, the game was over. The Titans fans, as I said, were very nice on the way out. They were congratulating us. We're walking down the ramps from the upper deck. They're telling us, hey, are you going to go to Oakland? And good luck beating the Raiders. Mm-hmm. And then outside of the stadium, we had a couple of really great moments, because we went outside of the stadium and we saw this crowd across the street from the stadium. And so we went over to the crowd to see what was going on, because we saw there were all these Ravens fans gathered. And we believe that it was, I think, Jane Miller, news personality from Baltimore.
Sure.
Yeah, that was talking to people on the street, you know, Ravens fans on the street. And we saw that and said, oh, okay, that's nice. And then we saw another crowd of Ravens fans over by the stadium. And I said to my wife, hey, let's go over there and see what that's about. So we're walking across the street. And now, mind you, one set of Ravens fans this way, another set of Ravens fans this way. And as we're walking across the street back towards the stadium, I said to my wife, those two men standing there, I said, that's Ozzie Newsome. And cool. Yeah, and he was just standing there. And he had a stogie, and the other person that was standing with him was Ernest Biner. Hmm. And although I didn't know that at the time, I knew that it was Ozzie Newsome. I didn't know it was Ernest Biner. I walked up and I said, Mr. Newsome, you know, is it okay to take a picture of you? And he said, sure. And so I got my camera out, and before I could get my camera up, Ernest Biner snatched the camera out of my hand.
Yeah, takes the picture. That's great.
And says, you guys get in the picture. And so we got in the picture with Ozzie, got that up on the wall in my man cave downstairs.
Very cool.
And then we went over to the other group of Ravens fans just to see what was going on. They were by the ramp that comes from the underneath of the stadium. And all of the Ravens came out through that ramp, you know, up out of the stadium. And Burnett, Siragusa, and
Sam Adams?
No, McCrary, you know, came striding up the ramp, okay? They had their fatigues on. And then what we realized is that the people that we were standing amongst were not only Ravens fans, but Ravens family members.
There you go.
Because we were standing right next to Peter Boulware's family. And I don't know if you've seen Peter Boulware's brother, but he looks just like him. Okay. And then Peter Boulware came up. He jumped over the railing. And it was just this very nice organic moment, because not only were they milling about with the family, they were milling about with all of the fans that were there. And you know, we're just taking it all in, seeing this player and this player and this player, and they're signing autographs and they're talking, and there's the euphoria. And I said to my wife, I said, wow, we've got the limo waiting. Okay. You know, and I said, I got to go talk to the limo driver to make sure that, you know, because we're hanging out here, I don't want to, you know, stress him out or, you know, miss the ride or whatever. So I go around to the meeting point for the limo and I see the driver and he says, hey, take your time, no worries. And as I'm walking back, there's Priest Holmes sitting on a stanchion of the stadium, outside the stadium, all by himself. And so I walk up to him and I start talking to him. And I got a chance to talk to him for just a couple of minutes. I didn't want to leave my wife alone for too long, but I said to him at that time, you know, and you think this is kind of crazy. I said, hey, I don't know what's going to happen next season, you know, because we had the emergence of Jamal Lewis and you know how the salary cap works. And well, I don't remember what the salary cap was at that time, but it was the likelihood that he was going to not be with the team. And I said to him, I don't care where you go. I like you very much. I'll root for you wherever you are. And he said, thank you very much for that. And then I went back and joined my wife and we, you know, gathered with all the Ravens fans and then had a great night out on the town, you know, in Nashville, which is a, you know, great place town. Itself. Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds like one of the all-time great road trips. It certainly was for us as well. And I'll just say it was also our first road game. As I think back at this, it's our first road game we ever went to. And if only they could all be that good.
Oh, absolutely. As was for me.
That was very, very, very special. Well, Gil, thanks for coming on. Your story is great, and we ran a few minutes over, but definitely worth the time. One of the things I wanted to mention just real briefly is that the two plays are often compared, the Lewis touchdown on the interception and the Anthony Mitchell return. The Anthony Mitchell return came at a point where the game was in the balance. The change in win probability was enormous on that. It was a lot like the Hubbard recovery and return of the fumble at the goal line in terms of a change in win probability. The Lewis interception, it sealed the game, but it's nowhere big as play. And to the life of me, I cannot understand the generalized fascination with the Lewis interception over it. Any comparative, it seems to fans in Baltimore seem to have a much greater satisfaction with the Lewis interception return.
Oh, well, that there's one thing that's clear is that Eddie George was the villain, and that was just one of many moments in Ravens history where Ray bested Eddie George, and, you know, it was the proverbial nail in the coffin for them. And I will say this, that Titans fans are really nice, but in the lead up to the game, because of their previous history from the previous season, they were assured that they were going to win this game. There was no question, you know, if you listen to their broadcasts and everything, revenge was on their mind and they were making their way back to the Super Bowl. So it was pretty satisfying. And, you know, Ray is just the symbol of that. And so, but we hold the Anthony Mitchell play as the quintessential greatest play that propelled the Ravens along their way.
Yeah. That's the way it is for me too. Before the Mile High Miracle, I think it was definitely number one in terms of importance in Ravens history. And the Mile High Miracle probably eclipsed it. Some would argue the fourth and five play maybe eclipsed it. That's fine too. Don't have any problem with that. But Gil, really appreciate you coming on and talking about this with me. So where can people talk football with you, or maybe where can they hear you?
I call the radio programs from time to time. I really enjoy talking to Bruce Cunningham. I love his sports show. And you hear me talking to Bruce all the time, who used to be a former neighbor here in Perry Hall.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on that one play, just like Gil here, please give me a DM on Twitter. They're always open. What play you want? There's a long list of plays, and there's an unbelievably long list of plays that haven't been taken yet. So there is some overlap. We need to get it cleared, but I'll be back to you very quickly. We'll record probably within a week. It's taken Gil and I a little longer, but some scheduling issues to work through there. But Gil, really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me again.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.